Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
We're all like guns, and I love being free. Because I'm armed, you can't take that from me, and you should know it.
Hello and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 136. I'm one of your hosts, Mike, and with me tonight I have Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, Mike, just me tonight. Benny's not here tonight. Well, he was here.
So what have you been up to in guns lately?
I haven't done much this week. I've actually been off sick for the last month, so no shooting. I just did some reloading. I loaded up some 9mm made them a little bit longer, and I changed the crimp because I was going to take Crystal Power suggestions, so I made them down to 120. Actually, I was going to go to the range today to test them, but it was raining, so the Orsa League at my club, if it rains, they automatically get the indoor range, so I didn't go, but I just loaded up some of those, and I loaded up some 44s, trying to make new rounds for my ranch hand. What else did I do? Oh, I got the Strike One all packed up. I'm actually going to ship it out tomorrow and get it fixed. We'll get that done. And once I get it back, I'm going to take the Strike One and my Benelli MR1, which I like, but I'm still going to take it to Firearms Outlet and sell it on consignment.
So you're finally going to send your Strike One back to see if there's something wrong with it?
Yeah.
Are you going to test it to see if the light primer strikes go away after?
Oh, definitely. Well, when I get back, I'm going to test it first.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to take a gun in that doesn't work.
Okay, yeah, but I mean, are you going to reconsider the gun once if it starts working properly again?
Hell no, I got a Grand Power Q100. What do I want to strike one for?
I don't know. How many handguns do you have in your collection?
Right now, about 18.
Well, that wasn't a serious question. It's more about the collector value of it.
Well, I guess it does have collector value because they're not making them anymore. They now have the Speed 1 and the Speed 2. I just find it's extremely accurate. It is a nice gun. And for a striker fire, the trigger's, rather nice on it. I just find it doesn't fit my hand properly. It's a fixed grip. I find I have to get such a high, it's got such a low, bore axis, but you really have to get the web of your hand right up under there. And I find it's uncomfortable where with the Grand Power Q100, I've got all the adjustable back straps and it's the exact same grip as my X-Cal, exact same grip as my K22. So I shoot it very well. So
yeah, it is a nice gun and it is really nice how low the bore axis is. It's actually kind of weird when you first grab it and go to point the first few times. I found I was looking over the sights lots of times.
Yeah,
so you're expecting the sight to be an inch higher.
Yeah, and you end up repositioning your grip when you do it. Because this doesn't feel right. And then, once you're used to it, it's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I thought about keeping it just for collector stuff, but I don't really collect anything. Anything I have in my safe, except for that crappy Ruger P94 that I hadn't shot for 15 years. But everything that's in my safe, I use.
Yeah.
I like shooting my guns. If it's just going to sit there and it's, I don't know.
Yeah. It is a bit unique. That's all.
I guess I could keep it.
Right. I don't know if that's the kind of gun that's going to go up in value in 5-10 years from now, but.
They've already gone up in value. The ones that are still here, they're going for almost $1,000.
Oh, wow. Really?
I think one stalls once, they want over 900 for it now.
And that's for the Strike One, not the Speed.
The Speed's over 1,000, I think, last time I looked.
Oh, wow.
Now, apparently, they're a popular gun because if you like the gun and it fits your hand, they are extremely accurate. Like, if you want a striker fired that's going to give Glock a run for its money, the Strike One will do it. It's extremely accurate, but, I'm fussy with how I like guns fitting my hand, which is why I don't like Glocks. There's nothing wrong with Glocks. They're a well-made gun. People shoot them very well. I can't shoot them well, and they don't fit my hand properly. They just don't feel good. Or 1911s, I really like. I like the way they fit my hands. That's why my compensated 22 with a red dot. It's basically a 1911 lower because I got big, huge, extra large 1911 grips to make up for the size and the small frame. And the same with the Grand Power. It's got the extra large and it fits my hand like a 1911. So
yeah.
It's all personal choice. Some people hate 1911s. They prefer the way the Glock fits in their hand. Just,
Yeah.
What about you, Mike? What did you do with guns this week?
Well, I've been off in Montreal for training. So haven't done any shooting. But I decided to go check out one of the more popular stores here in Montreal, CRAFM. I'm pretty sure I have that right. They're having a sale. Unfortunately, what I was looking for, they didn't have in stock, but Sarah got lucky, and she picked up some AR mags and some earplugs that were on sale.
What were you looking for?
I was looking for a plate carrier that they had on sale by Condor. But they did tip me off to another store that wasn't really local, but we ended up waiting until this weekend to go check it out. Who we did. It was called Parfair. I think that's how you say it. At least if you were to write that out in English, that's how they spell it in French. So went there and we ended up buying a whole cartload of stuff. We went in there with just the baby in the stroller and we're like, oh yeah, you know, we might buy a shirt or a pair of pants or something. You know, we don't need a cart. And yeah, we ended up filling it all up.
Don't you hate when that happens? You fill up the cart at the gun store.
You hate it's a love hate relationship, right? You love it up until the person tells you how much it is, and you're like, "Oh man, really?" But no, I ended up getting a plate carrier there, the one I was originally looking for. I also bought a new range bag, a hat, some pair of 5'11 shorts, and Sarah pretty much got a whole 5'11 outfit. So. Yeah, so it ended up being a great store, and they had a huge amount of stock, so.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Are you going to actually get plates for your carrier, or?
I might. I don't know. Plates are not cheap, so.
I think the standard ones are reasonable, but the Ultralight, was it the ceramic ones that Andrew had at Canadian Gunworks? Ooh, they're really pricey.
Yeah, those are like pushing, I think, like almost a grand. I think they weren't quite a grand, but they were pushing there. Yeah, I think S&J puts their plates up on sale every once in a while for, I want to say, about $300, which, I don't know. I'm not, I don't know if I'm going to like a vest yet. I've never worn one before. This is kind of my test run. So if I like it, maybe. If I don't, I don't know. Maybe. You always got to be ready for that zombie apocalypse, people. Never know when it could come.
I would have no use for it.
Yeah, and then I actually ended up buying a handful of parts for my GP100 off of CGN. I was looking for a second hammer so I could play gunsmith with it. Pretty much I want to try and lighten up the hammer so that I can go with the lighter springs in the gun. So I found someone who is looking to sell a handful of parts, other parts. He said he was originally planning on taking the spur off of it and turning it into a double-action-only gun. But I guess he just never got around to it, and he said he ended up selling the gun, and whoever he sold it to didn't want the parts, so it was my lucky day.
Oh, excellent. So what parts did you get? So you got your hammer. What else came with it?
To be honest, I can't remember off the top of my head. He sent me a picture of the part. I know there was no trigger in it, because that was the only other part that I'm like, oh, if he has a trigger, maybe I'll try and drill and tap it, which I later read online is next to impossible with the Ruger products, because the steel that they use is apparently so hard that you can drill through it if you have the right drill bit, but it's next to impossible to tap because you need such a hard tap that most won't work with it, I guess that's the right way to say it. But
well, it's a cast part. It's a wax molded cast part, I would assume. Everything they make
The frame is cast, but things like the hammer and I believe the trigger, and there are a few components in there that are like stainless steel.
Oh yeah, that will. Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus if it's got a curvature on it, it's really hard to.
Yeah, and it's not they're not very thick. Like the triggers, they aren't very thick, so there's not a lot of meat there to drill and tap through. Or I have to drill and tap through the trigger guard, the back of that, which I don't want to do because I imagine anything that sticks out would rub against my finger on the inside.
Yeah, you don't want to do the trigger guard. You actually want to take the trigger out to do it.
Yeah, because the way revolvers are manufactured, you can get your rear finger pretty much right behind the trigger. So it makes it real nice so you can get it nice and high, but it does kind of get in that way. It looks like it comes with the hammer spring guide. I don't know what you call it, the catch to keep the spring on there, plunger, the pivot pin for the hammer. I can't even tell what that part is in this picture. And what would you call that? The cylinder latch, the part that actually latches the cylinder lock to lock it up.
Yeah, so it's going to be basically a lot of backup parts for you.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be. It's a lot of backup parts, a lot of parts that, you know, I might play gunsmith with and see if I can do anything to make it better.
Well, have you finished working on your NORC 1911 yet?
No. That's just a project gun for when I'm bored with other things.
So when you screw up this gun, you get that one to screw up. Okay.
Well, that's why I wanted the second hammer, right? Because I realized that messing around with my hammer could really screw stuff up.
Is there an aftermarket hammer available that has already been lightened?
No. For Ruger GP100, pretty much the only thing you can get to change it out are sights and grips. Like, there's no changing triggers, no internal parts, no nothing.
Now, is it IDPA legal to modify your hammer?
I'm pretty sure it is. If it's not, then I'll just keep it for I-Corps. Once again, I'll have two hammers, right? So I could always switch back and forth.
Easier said than done on the fly, but yeah, okay.
Well, it wouldn't be on the fly, though, right? Because it's going to be, oh, I'm going to an IDPA match. I'm sitting downstairs in my workbench, and I have all my tools, and I change it out. And then, oh, I'm going to an I-Corps match the next day. Okay, I go downstairs to my workbench, I change it all out. It's not like I'm going to be doing it at the range.
Yeah. So what's guns in the news this week?
Guns in the news, story number one. Members list are worth money. So this is right from the CPC Facebook page. We are aware that our members are being contacted by an outside organization. The Conservative Party has not and will never release our members' personal information to anyone. We will be issuing a cease and desist letter to the organization in question, demanding that they destroy the list. We have also identified the parties responsible for sharing the information and will be taking disciplinary action against them. We regret that this incident has occurred. We have always taken our members' privacy very seriously and will continue to do so.
Well, you know, I actually contacted Gerald from the NFA. He's the vice president. I asked him for an official comment on it, and I did not get a response. Actually, I messaged him yesterday, and I messaged him again today, saying, we're going to record tonight for the show. Do you have an official response for this? So I didn't hear back from them. But just, it's not the first time I've heard of members' lists going from one organization to another organization. But the fact that somebody, especially in the Conservative Party, sold the list. I'm assuming it was for profit, because why else would somebody do it? It's pretty low, and I hope the discipline is severe. I really do. Luckily for me, I did not renew my membership with the Conservative Party this year, because I got really ticked off the last election. They were calling me constantly. Like, you know, once a week I'm getting calls and asking for money and asking for money. I said, well, you know, what else have you guys done besides getting the ATTs, putting the licenses? I said, you know, when Harper was running, he said he was going to get rid of Bill C-68. That never happened. I said, you know, we elected you guys on the promise that you do things. And I said, right near the end, you threw us a tidbit. And I said, now you're asking me for money constantly. I said, no, let me see you do a little bit more for gun owners, then I'll start giving you some money. So I never renewed. So I didn't get it, but friends of ours, Gavin was getting contacted from them. Actually, he actually got a call from them. If your friend's Gavin from the Canadian Patriot podcast, he actually got a call from the Conservative Party of Canada, you know, asking for money. And he mentioned this. He goes, well, no, I don't think that's true. And he told the guy, well, obviously you don't read your own Facebook page, because it's on the Facebook page. So even the people out there trying to get funds don't know what has happened. So.
Yeah.
I had that happen too. I used to belong to the National Wild Turkey Federation, and I had issues with, the director down here. I got to the point where I actually quit the organization, because of something that he did. And I won't mention his name or details, but he ended up screwing around a friend of mine. So, and I really didn't like that. And that this friend was actually one of my supervisors at work too. So I ended up quitting. And they ended up losing their charitable status. So the National Wild Turkey Federation of Canada got shut down. The director in question went over to Ducks Unlimited. And he took the membership with him from the National Wild Turkey Federation. And all of a sudden, all the people from the Turkey Federation started getting emails and literature from Ducks Unlimited. And I've never liked Ducks Unlimited. So, and Terry was getting it too, because we're both members. So obviously they did get the member list, because they got my information, they got Terry's information. So that really angered me when that happened. So it's worth money.
Oh yeah.
You're in a big organization, and you can get them some contacts, or raise them some funds. It's negotiable things these days. So I'd like to see what the Conservative Party actually does like this, about this.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to see how they respond and how the other organization in question responds to it. I mean, are they going to go with the Nixon deny, 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 or?
And then erase the tapes.
But I guess we'll have to see. We'll have to see how this plays out, and hopefully they pretty much stop annoying people, because it's really, in a sense, too bad, because now people are going to look at the Conservative Party and say, oh, you know, I don't want to donate to you, or I don't want to be a part of your organization because, you know, because I got put on essentially a list because of it. Meanwhile, it's really not the Conservatives' fault that they got on a list.
No, it's just an individual in the party who probably had access to the information, and it's, you know, it's confidential, and the individual was trusted with that information. And, you know, to violate the trust and the confidentiality of members of your party, that's pretty low. So I really hope he gets, I'm pretty sure he'll be disciplined in some way, but.
Yeah. All right. Well, move on to, I'd say, greener pastures, but I can see what story two is entails, so why don't you take it away?
There's a couple of video reviewers that I really like. First of all, I like Patrick E. Kelly. He does all these out of the box into the range reviews, and he's really, really good. And there's another guy, like, it's called the Firearms Guy, and he's totally opposite from Patrick E. Kelly. Patrick is a professional shooter, an instructor. Actually, I think he's now a Savage rep. The Firearms Guy is more like you and I. He's really laid back. He doesn't do a lot of shooting, doesn't do any competition, but he's this really, you know, down to earth guy. And when you see his videos, you know, you can see his passion. So I enjoy watching his videos just because of his personality and the way he gets into it. Anyway, it's called The Firearms Guy, if you want to check it out. He recently ordered, he saw the Remington RP9. It was on sale for $299, and there was a $50 rebate. So he got the new Remington handgun for $250. So he was really happy about it. So he got it, took it home, put it in safe, and next day he was going to take it out, but decided to take it down to clean it before he took it to the range. Like most of us do, they take all the clean pack. Well, he couldn't disassemble a gun. Something happened with the slide lock, and he's trying to get the slide off, and it's got to go back to Remington already. So, you know, this is their replacement of the last handgun that failed.
The replacement to the R-51.
Replacement to the R-51. And a firearms reviewer gets it, and it screws up again in the hands of another firearms reviewer. So, I wonder if we'll get a Pelican case out of the deal.
Well, shouldn't he have already gotten at least one?
I don't think he got an R-51.
Oh, okay.
But this guy does some really good reviews, right? So
yeah
and he's fair and honest, but just he's like, you know, I just got it, and he's trying to open it up. He's pulling back the release, and the slide, it just will not go forward. It will not come off. So whether some type of spring has come forward and is jamming up the whole system, so he won't dare test it, because if it's locked up going forward, what's going to happen if the slide goes back with the pressure of a round? So I put the link into the show notes if you want to see the Firearms Guy. Actually, I don't know his first name anyway, but if you want to see the link to the little review that he did on it. And I just chuckled. Like, when I saw this, I just about fell on my floor laughing. You know, one lemon after another, so.
Yeah, they're not exactly having very good luck when it comes to the handgun market, are they?
No. And even, like, the R-51, and a friend of mine had picked up one of the 1911s when they first came out a few years ago. And I said, oh, can I see it? You know, of course, you know, I do the slide frame fit. It was kind of sloppy. And then I do the bushing. You didn't need a tool. It was really sloppy. So I just pushed down on the barrel hood, and the barrel just clunks, just drops down. I said, this thing isn't fit very well.
Yeah.
And it was a piece of crap. He ended up selling it after like two, three months, just got rid of it.
Do you remember how much those are? Because those are the R1s, right? Like, that's what they call them? Remington R1.
I think it's the R1911, isn't it?
Is it R1911? Okay, maybe it's that. Like, anyways, yeah. Do you know how much
they were reasonable? They were reasonable when they first came out, but they're close to the same price as the Ruger 1911. Like, when they came out, they were like seven. Well, at this point, the dollar took a tank. But when they first came out, you could get the Ruger 1911 for, I've seen it, I saw it as low as $750. Average going price was between $800 and $850. But everything's gone up 30%. I think the Ruger's like $1,100 now.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why I asked, because I wanted to know, is the Remington comparable? Or is it kind of, could it fit a stepping stone between a Norinco and what I'll call, you know, a well-known brand? Then I could see it being, maybe it doesn't quite meet the fit and finish of Mr. Thomas Donnelly, but
Well, it was comparable to in price and fit and finish to the Ruger, but the Rugers that I fired, the barrel hood does not sink down, and it wasn't as refined.
Yeah.
If you these things are mass produced, so that, like the slides, for example, they're not hand polished. They're put in a tumbler, like a big tumbler, and it grinds all the sides off, give it that rounded look and everything else, because they're mass produced.
Yeah. Well, there's a price tag that comes with the hand fitted and the hand filed firearm, right?
Oh, big time, big time. But then I've picked up some of the Rock River, some of the stuff made in the Philippines, or the Armcor, and I've got an Armcor 1911, which has got the STI firing components, but the one that I have, I think I paid $850 for it like 8 or 7, 8 years ago. The slide, the frame fit on that thing is just as tight as my Kimber Gold Match, and you cannot take the barrel off without a bushing wrench, and it is a tack driver. It is a very tight fitting gun, where the Remington, it actually rattled when you shook it. It reminded me of a World War II, like any of the World War II stuff rattles.
Well, that's how it was designed, right? It was designed to be able to function in what I'll call a little bit more dirtier situations, whereas over time we've realized that if we tighten those tolerances up, then we can create a much more accurate and refined pistol.
Yeah, it was a combat firearm where the armor and the field could swap out parts interchangeably and the gun would still function. But when you start refining it, making all the bearing surfaces really tight to improve accuracy, that's when you start having, issues if it starts getting dirty and stuff. But the original 1911 and they're still pretty accurate, but it was meant as a combat firearm. It was meant that when you shook the gun, you could hear it rattle.
Yeah. It was essentially a Glock of the day. It was just meant to work. That's all they needed to do.
And I know a couple of guys that have World War II era 1911s that are still functioning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not surprised by that at all. All right. Well, why don't we move on to the main topic, your interview with Benny about maple seed.
Okay. And here's Benny.
So I'm here with Thomas talking about my first maple seed.
How'd it go?
Yeah, it went pretty well. I was happy with the end result. Happy with how it started. And not so happy how it was in the middle, but overall it was pretty good.
So what happened in the middle? The rain?
No, actually it rained the whole time pretty much, except for a little bit at the middle. But my performance, not necessarily counting the score, was not up to my standards. So I wasn't getting the hits I wanted to get, and my head just wasn't in the game by the middle to the end of the day, and I was quite surprised that I actually did as well as I did.
How many people showed up?
I think we had about 13, 14 people. We had one youth shooter who did really well. So
how many people altogether got their patch?
I'd say I think 3 or 4 people. I was the second person to get my patch, and I got my patch. And I completely blanked out after that, so I don't really know.
Okay, now this wasn't at a regular range. This was on a private facility. So yep. I guess they had to do a lot of prep because they knew the rain was coming. So how was the range set up? Did they have cover points or?
So the gentleman who hosted actually started constructing a tent on Friday. So we showed up and there was this huge tarp over what looked like an old antenna tower on some posts, and that held up this tarp for us. And so we had a nice cover point, so we weren't wet when we were shooting. The only issue we really had was our targets were getting wet. But otherwise it was really nice. It was in terms of any outdoor range. It was, I wouldn't say it wasn't any worse than anything else for an impromptu shoot. It was really good.
I was expecting to see my shooting mat all covered in mud and wet, and it's not. It's pretty dry, so at least you had a nice dry shooting point.
Yeah.
So there was no place to bring Val and Zev, so you just there by yourself.
I just left them at home. I didn't think it would be fair to bring Zev, and he'd be stuck in the car or whatever, and the loud noise. He doesn't really love his hearing protection, so I thought it'd be better if he stayed at home. They can spend the day doing whatever. So they had So yeah, I think it was a good decision in the end. Having gone, it wasn't like, oh well, maybe they could have done this or that. I think that was a good decision.
Now you have to excuse the background noise. We're sitting in my living room, and Colt is a little upset that we're not paying attention to him. He's a big suck. So Well, how many instructors do we have? Because we got Rick, Mario, we have Kevin and Kelly. Were there any other instructors there?
No, that was it. That was it for today. They switched off. Kevin was the shoot boss, and Kelly was in charge of the line for some point. And then Rick and Mario helped out at this size. And then when we had the MQTs, they were switching off being in charge of the line and marking MQTs.
Excellent. So you said three or four people got their patch.
Yep.
Now, there was no history portion as of yet.
No.
And so did they have the portion where they teach about optics?
Yeah. Yeah, they still had, like, after every, when they were introducing us to the different positions and the different ways of holding your rifle and everything, they still took us aside and explained, you know, how to sight your rifle, how to minutes of angle, and how that translates to your target to you, and from you to your optic, and how you're supposed to change everything like that. So they still did have a classroom portion, but it wasn't unrelated to the actual shooting. As of right now, there's no history portion. One thing people did mention was they felt like there wasn't a lot of time to do the MQTs, or just in general to do any of the things that were shown to them. But then, like Kevin said at the end, because they wanted feedback, right? So Kevin said at the end was that they normally, on a regular apple seed, we would have done one, maybe two AQTs. And the fact that we got five in by the end of our day was very impressive. And we had as many people qualified. In the States, apparently it's something like 10% of people going to apple seeds get their rifleman patch. And the fact that until very recently they were getting 50%, now 40, I think they're looking at 40-45% of their participants have been getting the rifleman patch, which is a lot better than what they're getting in the States. So it's, you know, with one day and all you have is to focus on your shooting, things are going to, some people may not get what they could out of the event, but hopefully, you know, they'll come back maybe next year and they can really build on the stuff they've started to build with Maple Seed.
Yeah, I guess they're kind of restricted of what they can do in one day because they don't have the history portion and they don't have the extra time where for the 2 days you can spread things out a little bit. You can give people a little more time to absorb what they've done. But even when I noticed when I did my first apple seed, the time between stages was really fast. Like you didn't get much time to get your mags loaded, get down and get set up. And, you know, once you're down there, and because it goes so fast and you've got your certain order of targets, I myself found, say, if the one stage said you have to do three shots in this target, five shots in this target, you know, and everything's going so fast. I find the first couple of AQTs, you mess up anyway because everything's moving so quickly, you're not following the actual shots that are required. And I found that I was screwing up targets too my first time.
Right. So like that, like I said, I said before the interview, that did happen to me. I sat down my first AQT and blanked on what I was supposed to do. And so I had the crosshairs on the target and I just follow through, pull, shot. And they were awesome hits. The only problem is I was only supposed to hit the target twice and then move on to the next one. So like, and then you'll see when I did that. And then if you look at my target, I realized that. And then my shooting went horribly off the charts. I just wasn't hitting anything, and it was at that point it was just, well, let's see how many bullets I can get down range because I won't be getting my rifleman here, so sort of what's the point. That's how I ended that string. The next string I realized that wasn't the best attitude and I should use the opportunity to just try and get my technique down so next time I'd get it, kind of thing. So
that's why it's important, like they always say, that to come with a teachable attitude, because a lot of times you go in there thinking that you're going to get it, and things start getting a little askew, then you start getting disappointed, and you start losing interest, because I found with us, the first day, George was really disappointed, didn't like the way he was shooting, didn't like anything, and plus he was in pain. by the second day, his attitude has changed. He developed a personal attitude or a teachable attitude. So getting everything crunched into one day, it's going to be quite a feat for these guys because it's a lot of information.
Yeah.
It's like drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah. Mario, I think, or Rick said that. Yeah. It really, when we were going over the after action report and going what people thought and everything, that was something that people felt. Having gone through a sharpshooter program in my past, I found that a lot of these things I'd known already, but thinking back, these things were taught to me over a week. It wasn't a day, right? So it was like a refresher course. And even with the refresher course, it took me quite a while getting my rifleman score. So anyone who's never taken a formal course before and shows up and gets, a lot of people were getting 190 to 199 for your first time with a formal class. I think that's very impressive.
Oh, yeah, it is. It really is. So how are the instructors? Do they appear knowledgeable?
I have to say that they did a very good job. People had if they had issues, they could identify it and help them fix their problems. As listener Thomas said, you know, he's been shooting for 40 years, but all that means is he's got 40 years of bad habits that he needs to now work to get rid of.
Good point. Good point.
So
how did listener Thomas do?
He did pretty well. He didn't get his rifleman score, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, maybe. He'll be back.
He will be back. And I hope he does. He should get it next time. But I don't know. Personally, I would be a little happy with the score he got because it's like close enough that he did really well for his first maple seed, but far enough that it's not like, well, if I just had that one more point kind of thing. So I guess it's a plus. It's like when I finished my steel match, it's like, well, you can only go up from here, right? So
Exactly.
But he did really well. And he was definitely a very positive influence on the rest of the people. Like there are some people grumbling about some stuff, but his can-do attitude was very infectious and he was very much like, you know, let's go, let's do this. And, you know, he was definitely my cheerleader the whole time. Like, I know you've got a lot of stress, but come, like, just focus on this. Don't think about what, you know, getting your rifleman score. Just focus on hitting the target. So he was very helpful in me getting my target. So I have to attribute my patch to him and you, Thomas, for lending me the equipment that I have to say was very much beneficial in having getting my rifleman patch, because I don't think I would have got it with my stuff.
Well, the equipment does help, but it's who's behind the trigger that makes a difference. And listener Thomas is a very positive person to be with. He's got that attitude. Did his son Baron come with him too, or did he come by himself?
He came by himself. You're right. He was very, very much a positive influence on me, and I feel like on everyone else around as well. But like you were, I wanted to mention, you said like you weren't really standing around a lot at Appleseed, and we didn't do that by Mapleseed either. Like sometimes you'll go to a shoot and you'll be waiting for people to load their mags. And I was a little bit, but I think that's mainly because I was listening to, as soon as the instructor said, okay, we're doing MQTs and we're up to this string of fire. Well, I knew that the next string of fire, we're going to need so many magazines with so many rounds in them. So I'm waiting for other people to load their mags. I'll just load those mags too. And now I'm ready for the next time. So I was pretty much standing there waiting to go the next time. For the next string, and I found myself waiting a little bit, but honestly, compared to what could be or what may happen in other classes or courses, there wasn't a lot of that. So
and you had more than three magazines.
Yeah, I actually only got three magazines. I only ended up using yours. I didn't use my dad's, but that was more than enough. I didn't find I needed more. Keeping for with the string of fire for the MQT, I don't know what it was like for the AQT. It was pretty much you use one mag, then you use two mags, then you use two mags, and use one mag again. So even with that, the first three mags, use the first mag, prep it again for the last use, and then prep the other two for after you use them. It wasn't much waiting around.
Now, was listener Thomas using his lever action or his 10/22?
He was using his 10/22, and I think.
Was that the most popular rifle there? Were there any other type of semi-autos there?
There were a couple, but I don't think there was any one rifle other than the 10/22 that there was multiple ones of. There was two guys showed up with takedown models, but there's I don't think they'd used them before. One of them actually went to the first maple seed, but I don't think he used a different rifle the first time. And it seems like they both went out and bought 10-22s, thinking that, well, we're doing maple seed, we've got to get 10-22s. But I don't think they'd taken them to the range beforehand. I think it showed with their shooting.
You know, I think they sighted them in, or they just didn't.
I don't think they sight. Well, one guy didn't really sight, put a reflex sight on his, and he was having issues with that. And then so he changed the reticle, and then his point of aim was way off. And then they tried to fix it, and it was already all the way in one direction. I think they pretty much. I think in that case they came without their equipment, without testing it, without becoming familiarized with it, and then expecting to do that at the maple seed.
Yeah, it's not a good idea. A reflex sight, and I've got several downstairs. If you see for mine, I like the smallest dot, but if I change it to the crosshairs, your point of impact changes. And the problem with the reflex sight is that a lot of times your targets are red. It's not a black target. You've got different colors. So if all of a sudden you've got a red target and you've got a red dot, say goodbye to your sight because you're not going to be able to see it. You can use them. You know, if that's all you got, by all means, bring it. But I would definitely recommend either open sights or something with crosshairs that you can visibly see.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, I was talking to the guy who actually, the organizer or the host of the event, and he used iron sights, and his highest score was 190, I think. And I believe that anyone who's using iron sights and managed to get that score with an optic would be doing a lot better. So he said next time when hopefully he'll be able to bring them out again next time. And when he does, he's going to try and use scope and just to get his rifleman and then move back to iron sights.
Yeah, even the tech sights or the aperture sights, they tend to work really well. At my Appleseed, a couple of people had those, but most of them had low power optics. Did they check your the power setting on the scope?
They did not. And actually, we did a to break up the MQTs because people were getting a little frustrated, I think. I know.
You're getting frustrated.
I was getting frustrated. I just felt like my performance was just not up to par. Like, I knew I could shoot better, and I just wasn't. Whether it was I wasn't hitting the target or I wasn't following the instructions properly. So they put up, I don't know if anyone's familiar with the Appleseed poker game. They put up targets like that, and the person who's had the best hand would win a maple seed patch. I shot horribly on that, but that's not the point. But that really broke it up, and for that I was like, hey, can I use high magnification? And they're like, yeah, sure, do whatever you want. Like, we don't care how you shoot this. It's just for fun. So I turn up the magnification, and I'm like, wait a second, my point of impact's gonna change. I may be able to see the target properly, but I don't know where my bullet's going. So I actually dialed it back down, and I think that sort of hurt me in the end because I ended up hitting the wrong cards twice, and it was just, yeah.
Yeah, if you turn it up to 24 on that scope, you've got to really make sure you're on the right target because it's like holding it right up in front of your face.
Yeah, so I got like probably to like 10, and then I'm like, no, I like the crosshairs are getting fuzzy. I can see the card, but the crosshairs are fuzzy, so I pulled it back down to 6 and I shot like that, but again, I was a little frustrated. I think after that, though, when I did my MQT, I think that was the one I really did well on. So yeah.
I think I did the same thing the first day. I was getting frustrated because I wasn't happy with my own. Like, I was getting close. I was like 180s, 190s, 201, but I just wasn't getting it. And the next day, I got into it. So I can understand the frustration because I went through it too. And yeah. Plus, with the weather, the humidity, everything else, it's damp, you're cold, you're uncomfortable, the mosquitoes, you're by yourself, you're in the middle of freaking nowhere. It's like,
Last week, I was like, you know, I'm not wearing my long sleeve shirt, I'm going to wear a polo because it's going to be hot. I got sunburn, I had sunscreen in the car, so, you know, I put it on, but it was too late already. And then I was like, you know, if it's going to be sunny on Sunday, I'm going to, for the maple seed, I'm going to have my sunscreen. Apparently I need to get bug spray, so that's going in my car next.
Okay, so recommendations, because we gotta let Benny go, because he's just dropped by my house on the way back from maple seed. He's still gotta go home, he's gotta work tomorrow. So recommendations for anybody that's going to their first maple seed, you know, what they should bring besides a teachable attitude.
Look up, well, some people didn't get the complete equipment list, so definitely try and find that. I think they're going to do their, I had the list. I had no problem with that, but,
there is an equipment list on the webpage still, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But some people were only knew about it through Facebook or through some other form. So, I think what you should definitely do is take your rifle out to the range, and it doesn't have to be any specific target. Just put a target up and run your rifle. Just go through a bunch of magazines and just either A, sight it in, or B, just try and hit that dot. Just to become familiar with your firearm a little bit. Because I feel like a lot of people showed up and then they were like, or the biggest impediment to some people was that they showed up with a firearm that they were not familiar with, and that the firearm wasn't performing properly, and then that reflected on their opinion of Maple Seed. I think hopefully they'll come out to Maple Seed again, but I feel like their experience was tarnished because they hadn't taken their equipment out beforehand and done the appropriate measures when you get a new firearm, which is take it to the range and sight it in, kind of thing. So.
And if there's going to be a failure in your equipment, a Maple Seed will test it, because the amount of rounds you have to put through it, like, it's really going to test your equipment to its limits. Because the first Maple Seed, we had quite a few optical failures, either the mounting systems or the weakest point was the actual mounting systems. And then, of course, the cheaper optics. And as you said, if it's a brand new rifle, you have to work it in. There's metal on metal. It takes a little wear, break-in period, just like your car or anything else. So it's a good point. If you get a rifle, especially 10/22, just for Maple Seed, take it out, sight it in, and put a brick through it. Just see how. And it's important that you find out what ammunition your gun likes. Okay, I know. Yeah. On my first one, my big issue was I bought some of the Winchester 5.55 stuff. I had nothing but issues. And Stacy, thank God, exchanged my Winchester stuff for the Guerrilla High Speed, and I had no functioning issues after that. So it's important to find out what your gun likes to eat and how, and beat it up a little bit before you actually take it there, because it's going to be tested.
Yeah. I've used your 10/22 already with my Remington bucket stuff, and I only had three malfunctions. I think that was more of my error, because the way you're shooting with in Maple Seed, it's hard to see your adjustment port. So if you're having a malfunction, it's like, I'm pretty sure one time I tried to pull the trigger and I had the safety on, and I thought that I had pulled the trigger and it didn't go off. And so I ended up ramming a second bullet into the first that was already in the chamber. So what I ended up having to do, and I think I did it twice actually, this is how I ramified it. I dropped the mag, let the bolt go back home, and then I just shot without the mag in, and then the round went off. So I'm not 1,000% sure what would happen in those cases, but yeah, you definitely have to test your ammo and use the right stuff.
You know, when I think about it, I did the exact same thing on my Apple Seed, because I never use my safety ever.
Yeah.
But when you do Maple Seed, you're going to have to use your safety, and you have to use your chamber flag and your test. And they walked out and they want to visibly see those safeties on.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. If you're somebody like me, I go to pull the trigger, I'm like, oh, damn, stupid safety. Because I never use the safety on the 10/22. Because your finger's your safety. That's what I've always been taught. That's your safety.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good point. Limit your equipment.
Yeah. So like I was borrowing your rifle, Thomas, but I took it to the range beforehand, just like, and I've shot it before and I knew it shot the Remington bucket stuff well, but I still took it to the range just, I happened to only put a couple magazines through it, but it a little bit at least familiarized myself with the rifle. So when I got to the Maple Seed, it wasn't like, here's this rifle and now I have to figure out how to use it, while learning all these skills and then trying to apply all these skills and actually perform well. So,
You're smart. You took it to the range, you play with it first just to see how it would function. And before I gave it to you, I show you the different functions, the auto bolt release and things like that. Yeah. So that's an important, a good point. Know your equipment. And I would say, like, take it, like what you did, take it out if you're not familiar with it and just run it as much as you can.
Yeah.
Because especially on a day like today where it was raining, so you're going to get water and crap into the action. All the unburnt powder from the blowback, then you get it congels and stuff. So what I did, I just threw a can of Brunox something in my bag with Benny, and I said, at lunchtime, to get a break, just spray some in the action, Oops. Cycle the action back and forth, just in case you don't have any feeding issues.
Right.
And run a boar snake through it, you know, just to, did you do that?
No, I should have. I was thinking, like, I'm pretty sure Thomas said something about if it's not running properly, but by that point, I think maybe one time, two times, the bolt didn't go all the way back, or it didn't eject the round properly. But otherwise, like I said, like I only had 3 malfunctions and it ran flawlessly. And I think those malfunctions are probably user error, though. Like I tried to blow it a second round in, but I don't know. I couldn't see into the action.
So, Dave, so besides that, do you have any other recommendations for somebody that's going for the first time, besides getting to know your equipment?
No, because pretty much like Maple Seed is there to teach you like the basics of being a rifleman. So, like I said, this is all the stuff. Like I learned this stuff in the Army the first time, doing my marksmanship course. But they spread this out over a week, right? So, you know, you're getting all this in one day. It's kind of hard to take it all in. But even if you just remember that it's there, but only focus on one or two things, they'll make you focus on everything, in its appropriate time. Like it's not everything at one time. You'll definitely walk away with something. You don't need, I think, anything except for a teachable attitude. Know your equipment, because they're not there to teach you your equipment. They're there to teach you how to shoot. And let's say you bring something and it doesn't work out. Some guy there didn't want to take a loaner rifle because he wanted to learn how to use his rifle.
It's the wrong place to learn.
Well, that was the problem, and I should have said something and I didn't. But his idea was like, I'm coming to this course. I want to learn how to use my rifle. And what I should have said to him was, this course isn't here to teach you to use your rifle. It's here to teach you to use a rifle. If you pick up a loaner rifle and you can shoot the loaner rifle, using these fundamentals, when you pick up any other firearm, whether it be pistol, rifle, bazooka, it doesn't make a difference. You'll be able to apply these marksmanship, ideas and be able to perform with whatever firearm you're holding.
Do you remember what kind of rifle he was using?
He was using one of the breakdown 1022s. Yeah, I don't know. He had his toy and he wanted to use it, and I understand that. I don't think I would have wanted to. If I just bought a rifle, I don't think I would have wanted to try to use something else. But then again, my objective going to Maple Seed was to learn a little and then also get my rifleman patch. So I don't really care what tool I used to do it, seeing as I used your rifle. But I wanted to get that patch, so... Yeah, it was a different attitude. I think we were both there to learn. He wanted to learn one thing, and I was there to glean whatever I could, but I really was aiming for the patch. So,
now, the important thing, how much did this course cost you? It was like $40?
Something like that. And then the range fee.
Was $15
for the range fee. But it was like, I'm a member of Maple Seed, so I think it was $35. But it was worth it. I said this last week, you know, going to the fast course, and that was $50.
And that was a special discount as well.
That was also, but again, it's a fundamental course, and people like discount how much you actually gain from this. Like before I went to that course, I was shooting my Jericho and I thought, well, this thing can't shoot straight. No, I just didn't know how to shoot it properly. And so that's.
So you're lucky. You've got two excellent courses of fire training for an incredibly cheap price, because any type of marksmanship corp, similar to what you learn in Maple Seed for a day, you're looking at $200-$300. Minimum of $300.
I was talking to someone. He's like, why don't you get holster qualified, you know, for the next steel match? And I was like, because I don't want to spend $320 just so I can use a holster at a range. It's not worth my time or my money. So, you know, we'll have to see about that some other time.
So, Benny, congratulations.
Thank you.
Good to see the patch.
Thank you.
And... We'll be speaking to Benny next week. Thanks a lot. Have a safe drive home.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Awesome interview. At least I'm assuming it was, Thomas. How was it?
It was excellent. And again, Benny, congratulations for getting your Maple Seed patch.
Yes, congratulations.
He had it proudly displayed on his head. So I didn't even have to ask him as soon as he got out of the car. You got your patch. Excellent. I shook his hand.
That's good for him. All right, so moving on to events. You want to take event number one there, Thomas?
The Cornwall Handgun Club is holding their first mil cert match on June 10th. Link is in the show notes.
Event number two, Carbine Operator Course, is being put on by Ragnarok Tactical July 7th in Kitchener, Ontario. It's $200 plus theft. And then I'll do the 7th Annual Canadian Podcaster Charity Shoot is on July 8th, Guelph. It's $40, and links for both those are in the show notes.
And the Florenceville Gun Club is having their 4th Annual Club Fundraiser. Tickets you can purchase at the link in the show notes. I would suggest go to their Facebook page and have a look at some of the prizes. I know they got a really nice Tikka T3 and some really good stuff. So go on, have a look, see what there is, and you can buy some tickets there. Listener email, it says there's none, but we did get an email from Mr. Uzi, did we not?
Did we? I didn't get it.
I'm sure we got it. Maybe it went to, because I looked at my Gmail and I don't see it, but he said he sent it in.
I never received it.
He said he sent it. Hang on. So, Mr. Uzi, you're going to have to wait till next week, but I'm positive you sent it. So, sorry, Thomas, but we will check it.
Yep.
Because he said he did send it when you get home.
And next time you send us an email, send it to host@newshootercanada.ca.
Yes, then we'll get it. Or, Thomas, you can resend it to that one, and we'll read the whole thing on the air, even, and we'll leave all the edit points in, too, so... I'm sure knowing him, there'll be some profanities.
And if you don't feel like emailing us, you can always message us on Facebook or in the comment section on our website at newshootercanada.ca.
And iTunes, I guess we haven't checked. And Facebook likes are 1,109.
It says none right beside iTunes.
Yeah, but did you check?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so we have none. I've never been on iTunes.
Yeah.
Actually, that's not true. I did actually, on my old computer, I did download 2 songs for iTunes. That was it.
The only reason why I have iTunes is so that I can check to see if our listeners wrote anything. So please, listeners, write us an iTunes review. All right, Thomas, you have a closing comment for us?
Yeah, closing comment this week comes from the Motor City Madman himself, Mr. Ted Nugent. And actually, there's quite a few. I'll read them to you because I thought they were really good. Mr. Nugent says, if you want to know what time it is, get yourself a watch. If you want to protect yourself, buy a smoke detector, buy a fire extinguisher, wear a seatbelt, get yourself a human scum extinguisher in your favorite caliber. If you want to be healthy, kill and eat deer. If you want an emergency fund or a nest egg, start saving today. If you want something, buy it yourself. Don't expect others to buy it. If you want less evil in the world, do more good. If you want lasting peace, prepare for war. If you want less of something, tax it. If you want your kids to have positive role models, look in the mirror. If you are naive, you will be a victim, guaranteed. If you want to listen to music, listen to artists that have mastered their instruments. That I agree with 100%. If you want a real barbecue, get some hickory. If you want security in your home or your country, lock your doors. I liked it. I thought it was... He's a little crazy, but sometimes he comes up with a few good things.
Yeah, there's some good quotes there. I definitely... take a liking to the one, if you want your kid to have a positive role model, look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I grew up with Ted. Like, when I was a kid, that's when Ted Nugent's first solo album came out with the Amboy Duke. So Ted Nugent became really popular with, like, I bought the Ted Nugent album with the song Stranglehold when it came out in 73 or 74. And the first couple albums after that, I think Free For All and Cat Scratch Fever. And then once he lost... what's his name? The lead singer left. I lost interest. Once he did the Sweet Poontang thing, I just lost all interest in Ted Nugent. Musically. He's just... But, you know, the odd time, if you want to see somebody great live, he is hilarious live. But then again, I'm old.
That's generally not exactly the way that you sell, you know, a singer is, oh, he's hilarious.
He's funny. You can't... Some of his stuff probably would be censored on YouTube. He is a stout conservative. He's a real hater of the Obama administration, the Clintons, and everything else. So he does. I can't even say it because I'll get edited out. But any shoutouts this week?
Yes, my shoutout is to Sarah because I am sitting in a hotel room with Sarah and a baby, and baby hasn't cried once. So shout out to her.
Excellent. My shout outs to Benny. First of all, when Benny came by, he was exhausted because he had a really long day. And he's not recording with us tonight. I said, well, come on in. We'll just do the interview. He goes, come on, I'll make you tea. No. And I said, well, be 10 minutes. Okay. So I talked him into, well, we were 45 minutes. So poor Benny was kind of tired when he left here. But, I appreciate him dropping by and cause he wasn't going to make the show tonight. And I kind of talked into it. So thanks for spending the time, Benny. I knew you were tired. You're going to go home. And I don't think he ate either. I think Mel made him a lunch, but. So he's going to go home, have a big meal, and crash.
You didn't even offer him a sandwich?
He's got dietary restrictions.
Yeah, I guess.
I thought about it. I was going to order, pizza. So I went on to see if I could find any kosher pizzas around here. No. I figured I'll make you tea. So I went through and I do have tea that's kosher, but I thought about them. I figured, well, I have something to eat. Then I started reading all the restrictions. Oh man, well, can't have that. Well, oh no, that's got milk. Can't do that. No dairy meat. No, that's a no go. So
yeah.
So if you have friends that have dietary restrictions, it's a good idea to study up where the restrictions are. So if Benny comes over to my house, all he's going to get is tea. If he was driving, he would have a beer.
Yeah.
He does. Yeah, he would have a beer if he wasn't driving. And there is beer in the fridge, but I wouldn't offer him a beer if he was driving anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, why don't you take us on out of here, Thomas?
Okay, everybody. Thanks for listening to us drone on once again. Until next week, keep your barrels downrange and smoking.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
I really like 22 Mag.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.